just, you know, plug it again because we're getting the recording going. You're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus, 444-0044 in Spokane, toll-free outside the area, 877-TAP-COIN, or through our website at coinsplus.com. Again, Coins Plus is always involved in every form of purchasing precious metals, folks. And I also want to tell you, we offer it all. We do it all. We do 401ks. We do IRAs. We do all these things. I had a really close personal business associate contact me last week or earlier this week. Actually, it was last week, wanting to liquidate a 401k and asking if we're involved with that. They weren't even aware that we did that. And so, you know, please understand, we do it all. There's some kind of a psychology that we have that thinks it's marketing is an amazing thing. We see someone on the TV or we find a really neat website online and we automatically ascribe massive significance to these other companies. When I speak to some of these other companies, our volume far supersedes them. They're usually very niche, very specialized, and I don't know what it is, but people always think that the bigger, badder guy is all the way out there somewhere far away. I remember years back being involved in this significant collection, and this old gentleman was kind of looking at a firm in Chicago, and I said, well, why would you do that? I mean, we pay more than they do. And he goes, well, how could you? They're in Chicago. And I'm like, what is your logic there? And he goes, well, Chicago's a big city. I mean, they have to pay more. And actually, it's the opposite. They have to make more. To rent space in a big city like that is absurd. The other problem is Coins Plus is a locally owned and operated, Christian owned and operated. It's a family business. We're not running a get-rich-quick scheme. We're not paying people substantial commissions. And you would just be surprised in these businesses. I mentioned in the last show about annuities. I mean, people have this view of things that is so skewed. And yet, the other problem is when you go on Google, when you want to Google something, do you truly realize that every single thing that you find is paid for? And people will say, yeah, I do. So how do you know what you can even trust? And, you know, people will go online and they'll look and they'll read and they'll say, well, I want Silver Eagles. Well, the reason they're pitching Silver Eagles is because they can get all they want. They can get barrels and buckets and truckloads till they're blue in the face. When you run an operation like us, they also don't inventory stuff like we do. We have a substantial inventory. It's pretty ridiculous. And so we actually hunt and search and buy and peck. Plus the fact that we've been in business 20 years, we have a revolving door of product always going through. People will buy from us, they'll sell to us, and we just keep it going. So just please realize we do it all. We're nationally competitive in all areas. There are aspects of our business that are deceptive. I've talked about them in the past. There was the huge class action lawsuit against Goldline. Goldline still does severely overcharge people like ridiculous, double what things are worth. And folks, when I explain this to you, I'm not trying to scare you into buying what, you know, you need to buy. I cannot believe in some cases the narrow-mindedness of people when I actually will explain, I will expose these issues, and they will not understand that the guy who's kind of the whistleblower on bad aspects of the industry might be the guy you can trust. It's just kind of confounding to me. But Goldline has commission salespeople. We don't. We're not even anywhere near that mentality. We just buy and sell product at a high volume and a low margin, period. It's a whole different world. Basically, a lot of those other companies, precious metals based assets is just what they do. It's just what they sell. They could just as easily be selling cars or cardigan sweaters or, you know, shoes. I mean, to them, it doesn't matter. They're selling a product at a markup. We're vested in this from every aspect, from our conservative financial principles to our biblical perspective on life, to our integrity and ethical motto, where we say honesty and integrity in every transaction, the fact that we're locally owned and operated, you can come and look at us, touch us, feel us. Folks, the majority of these online outfits, you can't even go there. There's nowhere. They're boiler rooms. They'll have the biggest, beautiful website, and you're just sure they're the greatest. They're operating out of a boiler room. There's one in particular that I saw recently. They just have a picture of some random great big office building and some office complex on there. It's not where they're at. They're operating out of an industrial park, out of the back warehouse, because I know a person that runs the company. So you just got to be smart. We probably have one of the nicest brick and mortar facilities in the United States, literally built from the ground up. You'll never find another one like it. What's significant about that is the fact is that we're here to stay. We've been in this building now probably 11 years, I think approximately. Since 06, we've been in business since 96, and we've just done a lot of things over the years, and we're here to stay. We're solid. I didn't really mean to go down that road too hard on you, but I just think it's important to realize, and we're Christian-owned and operated. This is our bread and butter. It matters to us when you do business with us. And it matters not just from a financial perspective. It matters. It's our livelihood. We take pride. We appreciate you. We appreciate your money. We appreciate your respect. We appreciate your trust. I just want you to realize it's meaningful to us. It really is. And, you know, when you go somewhere else, you're just a number. You're just part of a process to us. We get to know you. People who've done business with us over the years know that. You become our friends. Literally, probably the vast majority of my friends, in fact, probably the vast, vast majority, have come through business. That it's important to us. So please understand that. It matters to us. It really does. And because of that, we value you. We value your business. We go the extra mile to do right by you. And so, I can't express it any other way. You know, when you go to businesses, you call it backroom chatter. That's what gets said behind the customer's back or away from their presence. Our backroom chatter is all about doing right by the customer, making them the best deal, providing them the best products, and giving them the best prices, and finding ways to actually do research. We do research, national and international research, not to charge you more, but to find ways to charge you less. That is constantly on our heart. So please understand, if you're considering doing business here or elsewhere, we really appreciate your business. We want it. We need it. And we will respect it. We'll earn it. And you'll be pleased you chose to do business with us. A moment before I kind of started re-recording, I was talking about my friend in Miami, who's a big, we'll call him the big shot watch guy. Very interesting to talk to. He lives in the heartbeat of the cash. I mean, there's so much money down there. It's not even funny. He's from very close to Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump's house. I was down there about a month ago. I went to the Concours d'Elegance, which is a huge car show. We had the privilege of being with some family that owns an extraordinary number of large car dealerships down there, prior partial owner of Auto Nation and, you know, private jets and all this kind of stuff. The first night of the Concours d'Elegance, they have what's called the hangar party. That's where you show off your private jet. No, folks, I didn't have a private jet to show off. Sorry. But wow, what an experience. And we got to meet Jeff Foxworthy, the you might be a redneck guy, and we actually got private tickets from him to go to another event, backstage type stuff. And he's a good Christian guy. It was pretty interesting, pretty fun. But anyway, that area is so saturated with wealth, it's crazy. So I was talking to this friend of mine, and really, he has been over the years a very valuable insight on what the economy is doing. Because that southern, whatever it is, Florida area, you know, you've got everything going on there. You got cars, you got real estate, you got diamonds, you got watches, you got gold. I mean, you just got money. You got people from all over the world. And those people like their gold. They love their precious metals. They love their valuables. And they literally, he said that he is seeing a freeze on the markets. And what he said is that he believes that there has been such a hypersaturation of money from our government under the Obama administration that we have now officially fleeced the wealth of the globe. And what that means is, folks, we have this reckless Keynesian economic system that has essentially depleted the wealth of Americans. You know, in so many ways, we just don't realize what's happened to us. And now we've added the mentality that we need to pay our fair share. If you don't pay, you know, I mean, folks, Paul Ryan said, you know, the House Budget Committee chairman or whatever he is, you know, he said recently, successful business owners in America pay an average of 44.6% tax. Now, I've had people go, well, that's your fair share. I have a lot of friends that are self-employed, and, you know, and obviously I am. That's really, really hard to do. It's just very brutal on your business because what happens is you run a business, you work your tail off, you try to make a profit, you know, you got to pay people, you got to pay vendors, you got to do this, you got to do that. And after you get done at the end of the day, you know, after you've paid all your bills and all your overhead, then you get a little bit of your own. Okay, that's the cream. Out of the cream, the government comes in and basically says, thank you, we'll take approximately half of that. Just right off the top, you know, of course, this doesn't count the amount of money that gets expended on, you know, sales tax and all the other taxes that are packed into everything we buy. And folks, it's really profound. It's very relevant. So if you tend to buy into the logic that, well, I make 40 grand a year and a person who's self-employed makes 125,000 a year, but, you know, after they pay their fair share, they still get to take home 65,000 a year, and that's okay with me. The problem is it's so wasteful, and I talked last week about the velocity of money. Every penny ends up back in the government's pocket in Keynesian economics. That is the biggest misnomer that people do not understand. Same with the Federal Reserve System. People don't understand how every dollar that is created is backed by debt, and then they create interest on that debt and loan on that, and that they've got the fractional reserve currency system where for every dollar, so every dollar created is loaned out as debt, and it ends up in one person or another's bank account. Once it hits the bank, the bank is allowed to loan a 9-to-1 ratio of that deposit. So if you buy a house for $100,000, you borrow that money from the bank or from whoever, from the mortgage company, and then you pay that money to whoever you're buying the house from. They put that money in the bank. Now, whether they pay off their debt or whatever, somewhere along the line, that money ends up in the bank. Unless it comes out in the form of cash or unless they go buy an asset, okay, gold and silver type stuff. Once that's in, that $100,000 lands in the bank somewhere, now a bank can loan out another $900,000. Well, the problem is that's a compounding mess you can figure out in your head. And it goes on and on and on. And what it's a way for the system to just continue to expand until it has effectually consumed everything imaginable. And so we did that to ourselves in the U.S. We had the dot-com craze, which began to drag people's money into this country. We began to, we got to a point, ironically, where we were capable of paying off the Fed with, you know, our surplus, as they referred to it under Clinton. Clinton would have nothing to do with it. Once Bush got in and he started trying to tweak with taxes, then suddenly we got 9/11, which was a cover-up. You know, there's a lot that goes into that whole story, and people who don't haven't researched it might say, oh, goodness, this guy's crazy. But you just do some simple research. Architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, you know, there's like 28,000 architects and engineers on record saying that this is fishy. There's a huge number, you know, thousands that have signed an official petition protesting it. These are people that are trained in structural engineering. And, you know, the World Trade Center building number 7 went down 8 or 9 or 10 hours later, whatever it was, without sustaining any damage. They were doing heavy investigation on over 100 large corporations' involvement in basically cooking the books. Enron went down first. They took down Arthur Andreessen, the largest accounting company in the world, 260,000 employees. That company was willing to risk their entire business by all the money they were making cooking the books for these companies. Think about that. A company, accounting company of 260,000 employees willing to risk all they have, their entire integrity, to help large corporations cook the books because the profit was so huge. They were making billions of dollars a year doing this, and they went under. They lost everything. I mean, that you think of how profound that is. That tells you that if they would do it, anyone would do it. And if Enron was required, if Enron was all smoke and mirrors, fake from the floor, nothing real about them, no one quite understood what they were doing, then these other companies come along and they're like, we have got to sustain these certain growth levels. And they start to realize they can't, and the stocks are going crazy and they want to be part of the action, and the CEOs figure out all we got to do is cook the books. All we got to do is change the numbers a little bit and we're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So guess what they did? Well, you know, that was all coming together at the end, but you had so much money and so much influence and so much power involved in that whole episode when the IRS got involved and started to audit. I'm sure even on their part, there was people on the take, just a mess. You know, who knows who was involved, but there was people for the New American Century, your Cheneys and Rumsfelds and all this, where Rumsfeld came out the day before 9/11 and said, hey, we're missing $2.4 trillion out of the Department of Defense. We can't say where it went. We don't know. We're going to look for it. Well, of course, the records for that were in World Trade Center Building Number 7. World Trade Center Building 7 was the financial hub of the world, the financial record keeping. Of course, right down the street was Wall Street. And, you know, we were talking about the World Trade Center, the hub of world trade. All the businesses' gross product together added up to more than the single GDP of any nation on earth. I mean, very profound when you look at, you know, the Mystery Babylon reference in the New Testament. Just fits. And since then, the world has become a new place, a much different place. You know, we're at a point where we've got this supposed terrorist attacks all over the place. Today in London, you know, what do we got? An attack with 4 or 5 dead. Okay, life matters, folks, but I'm going to tell you what we're doing. We're losing our marbles. Think about it. We have changed our entire security process everywhere, and we consider any attack a failure. So if you consider any attack or any loss of life a 100% failure and you adapt to that over and over again, we are heading for martial law, whether you like it or not. And this is what I was hearing from my friend down in Miami, is he said it's getting so crazy, they're getting so afraid that martial law is coming. He believes it's coming. Sadly, he believes that Trump could be deceived into leading the charge. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But when you do the math, if there's 8 billion people, I did this today, imagine that. So there's 8 billion people on Earth, okay? Every year, about 1.75% of those people passes away, okay? So that's about almost about 150 million people die per year globally, 150 million die per year. Now, there's 365 days in a year, so that's about 411,000 people die every day. Think about that. 411,000 people die globally every day. You divide the day by 24 hours. That's 17,000 people die globally every hour, okay? Divide that by 60. We've got 285 people dying. I think I actually did that wrong. 285 people dying, it comes down to per second. I did some math wrong there. 285 people die per second globally or per minute, whatever it is. The point is, say 300 people die every minute, 17,000 a day globally. We lose four lives and we are turning our world upside down. The way we handle terrorism is mind-boggling. You know, there's the book, George Orwell's 1984, I've mentioned a few times. There's another book, Animal Farm, which is also very insightful on a little different level. But the point is, he predicted all this stuff. It was commissioned by the Fabian Society. You read that stuff, and it's crazy. They've got, you know, they have this mock enemy that just won't go away, and there's always an attack, and you never quite see him. But the point is, for folks, four or five deaths, and don't think I'm diminishing the value of a human life. But what I value more is the liberty of those survivors. When we have a nation full of 300 million plus people, unfortunately, a few percentage of those are illegal immigrants, which is another conversation. However, when we have 300 and some million Americans and we lose handfuls here and there, again, do not think I'm diminishing the value of a human life. I'm not. They're tragic, okay? These attacks and killings are tragic. But it does not mean that we need to sacrifice all of our civil liberties, as I've quoted Ben Franklin over and over. He who is willing to sacrifice liberty in the name of security deserves neither security nor liberty. We are not this. Our founding fathers had all this stuff figured out. Everything had been discussed. Everything had been theorized. Read the Federalist Papers. Just read the Constitution. They were not fools. These men were highly intelligent. They knew human nature. They knew how tyrannical governments govern. They knew how tyrannical governments deceive. And it's always, always in the name of security. Always in the name of security. And you must realize that they make you afraid. Why are we so afraid, folks? If you're a believer and you believe in God, and you believe that he has complete and utter control. Now, I've discussed free will and everything. Why are you afraid to get on a plane? Why are you afraid to go ziplining? Why are you afraid to bungee jump? I don't want to bungee jump, don't get me wrong. But the point is he in control of your life or not? Are you going to go around and try to shackle yourself down? I mean, why don't you just build a little concrete box and shackle yourself to a bar and have someone feed you through a door? That way you'll be super safe. No, that's not the way we're meant to live life. We're meant to live life. And to live life, we need civil liberties. We don't need a weight. We don't need a burden strapped around our neck of fear. This is how the government operates more and more. And now we're getting to these issues of the deep state. Okay, where we're finding out things today, like I mentioned earlier. All this evidence is coming out now. Lo and behold, well, maybe there were wiretaps. Maybe there was surveillance on Trump Tower. Maybe they really were. They know now that FISA warrants were acquired. What's a FISA warrant? A FISA warrant is a warrant that you must get in order to surveil a U.S. citizen, not foreigners. So the point is, they're saying, oh, it's probably foreign this and foreign that. People are convoluting it. No. A FISA warrant means they were watching U.S. citizens. Here's my theory. My theory is this. My theory is that Obama or someone near him did surveil the Trump campaign. I think that they watched everything they said, everything they did. They probably had incredible insights on his speeches before he gave them. They had a lot of knowledge about what was going on behind the scenes. That's why they were so shocked when they lost. It wasn't enough. Now they want to blame it on the Russians, for goodness sakes. Folks, what a rash. What a crock. You know, they're the sorest, whiniest losers I've ever seen in my life. And I guess I come from an era or a culture that you need to be a graceful loser, okay? You learn from your mistakes. And, you know, the Libbies, what they learn from their mistakes is how to be more deceptive and more corrupt and more destructive, more Saul Alinsky style, you know, to isolate more people and destroy more lives and be more harsh and control the media better. No, the lesson is people want to trust in our leaders. They want to have faith. They don't want to be lied to anymore. They want sincerity. They want someone who really will do what they say they're going to do. They want someone who's as fed up with the bureaucracy as we are. But what I'm seeing more and more is this socialistic-minded left. Now, obviously, I'm biased and skewed. And, you know, it really makes me mad. It's like the new schoolyard fighting rules. If one child walks up to another child and begins punching him in the face, and the other child punches him back to defend himself, they have a no tolerance for violence rule. Both of them get suspended. This is the new way. We're teaching them, you sit there and you let these people control you. They're brainwashing us in a terrible, terrible fashion. And this is what they're teaching people. They're saying, they're telling us to shut up and go away and not speak up. And if we do, you're a racist and a xenophobe and a homophobe and, you know, everything else under the sun. It's crazy. I mean, this is truly, when I say it's crazy, that's not just a phrase. It's not a, you know, cliche. It's real. This is nuts. This is insanity. We're being taught how to behave insane while they're confiscating our rights. Don't you speak up, though. You're not patriotic if you question anything that's going on that has to do with the red, white, and blue protection against terrorism. Our freedoms and our liberties is all we've got that make us different. And as they apply more and more and more of these laws, like the NDAA, that gives them the ability to indefinitely detain any U.S. citizen without Mirandizing them, and then to do whatever the heck they want to them and not let anyone know where they are, deprive them of food, sleep, you know, light, clothing, temperature, whatever. They can do incredible things to people now under this NDAA law. To citizens of the U.S., all they have to say, you're a threat to the government. You have anti-government sentiment. You don't think the day's coming where that's going to apply to a different, not just the Islamic, you know, they say, oh, it's not about Islam. But I've seen surveys on the streets by, you know, Jesse Waters or whoever, or even, I don't know. But anyway, on the streets where they'll talk to kids at colleges and say, hey, what do you think about, you know, Islamic rights to refuse certain services or to require certain rights, and they're all for it. And then they ask the same question pertaining to Christianity, and they say, no, 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 that's not fair. That's not right. Folks, I'm concerned that we're heading that way, that all these little slots are going to be filled with Christianity. as terrorists. Some radical group is going to get rebranded, etc. The other concern that I'm getting right now is the fact that economically, this country is spread so thin. We are in such a bind. And you may not fully, completely understand that, but, you know, basically where we're at is for over 100 years, our government has spent far more than they've earned using the Federal Reserve Act. Rampant. And then you know, when you look at an exponential curve, it looks like, you know, a ski jump. It's like it rises and rises and rises, then it gets steeper and steeper and steeper. Folks, this is exactly what it looked like before the crash of 29, leading to the Great Depression. When Obama takes us, okay, you go 1 year back into George Bush's reign, and we were at a $3.8 trillion deficit. And I always say that because by the time Bush got out, we were pushing $9 trillion because Obama demanded the stimulus bill. And Bush hesitantly said, I'm doing it for him, and I'm doing it because the bankers are telling me to do it. I don't believe in it. I don't feel right about it. The stimulus bill was a convoluted ripoff. They told us we had this mortgage debacle, $2.5 trillion in defaulting mortgages, which was true. Don't get me wrong. But the money did not go to fix the mortgage debacle. The money went to pump up all these companies, corporations, financial institutions that were losing because of it. It did no good for the individual. Individuals took a bath, huge, huge financial losses. Many of us may know the poor old couple that worked their whole life to save all their money to retire, only to lose everything and literally go back to work at places like Walmart. I met a couple, an adorable, sweet couple, around probably 2009 or 10 in Kalispell, Montana. The gentleman was 72 years old, and believe it or not, he was a retired ophthalmologist, a doctor. And he and his wife had saved their whole life for retirement, and a stockbroker lost everything for them, everything in the crash. And he literally was a greeter at Walmart at 72 years of age, just a dear man. That is so wrong. When Hank Paulson, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, who was worth $300 million when the crash hit, and by the time it was all said and done, he had moved money around to make himself a billionaire on Goldman and Sachs stock. Goldman Sachs stock went through the roof, their profits soared, and I can go down the list. It was unbelievable. Okay, this is what we're up against. Back then, we had a $2.5 trillion mortgage deficit. We had, or mortgage debt. We had $3.8 trillion in deficit a year before George Bush W. got out. We're pushing $20 trillion now, and Trump's full steam ahead. He's a populist, wants to make the people happy, wants to give them money, wants to do. I do believe he wants to get his name in history like FDR. When we get into this exponential phase, folks, where does it end? You know where it ends. It cannot go any other way. So we've got this policy from John Maynard Keynes, who argued in the 1930s that during periods of slow economic growth, active and purposeful government policies would allow the economy to spend its way out of a recession. So it's simply a matter of time before the citizens adopt the financial habits of their governments by living beyond their means. So then you get to the point where the Federal Reserve System has accommodated the government's policy of spending to excess by inflating the money supply, and then we've been keeping interest rates artificially low. Today's dollar will buy what in 1913 would cost less than a penny. So this easy money policy, or what we should call sloppy money policy, has not only led to inflation, but it's resulted in investments taking place that would not be justified had the money supply been constrained. That's our casino-style stock market, and had interest rates more clearly reflected economic reality. So what I mean by that is, you know, they pump money into the economy at such a rate that there's money to put in the markets. Interest rates aren't reasonable, aren't even relative to what true inflation is. So everything is a delusion. So we've got, since the 1960s, politicians who've relied on the flawed theory of Keynesian economics have fed the public's naive belief that the government can provide ever-increasing living standards by means of its monetary and fiscal policies. People believe the government can do all. I remember the term in 08, you know, where they'd say, we'll just pull this fiscal lever here and push a monetary button there. And, you know, but that meant that constraints on spending were old-fashioned and living standards would forever improve. The limitations imposed by the laws of economics had been repealed if you voted for politicians who promised to provide you with something for nothing. Fiscal prudence was simply a capitalistic lie. Self-control, financial self-control now, is a, they call it a capitalistic lie. You think they attack capitalism because they say it destroyed the economy? No. They attack capitalism because it's part of conservative fiscal policy that says we cannot spend ourselves into oblivion. We can't just provide every entitlement to everybody all the time. In the 90s, universities began teaching new economic theory. I remember this all too well. And it completely contradicted the mathematically sound economic policies that gave theories that the casino madness cannot continue forever, and it was all based on hype, emotion, and debt, and basically it can't be reconciled financially, mathematically. That's the mindset I came from. I'm like, how's this all work? It just made no sense. So, you know, where we're at now, folks, is households have stopped saving for the future. People don't expect to pay cash for everything or much. The U.S. in particular began borrowing more and more from China, Japan, the Middle Eastern countries to finance their spending addictions. And now these countries loan U.S. money to buy their goods. They loan us money to buy their goods. Think about the logic there. Financial responsibility has become an old-fashioned, irrelevant virtue, and they've come to believe that the government can wave a magic wand and provide improved housing, jobs, and lifestyles without the pain of saving and resisting the desire for immediate gratification. No one in America understands the necessity of patience anymore, and this is even more prevalent in the millennial generation. Waiting to earn and accomplish what our fathers and grandfathers accomplished is, you know, it's a relic of history. We want it all now, and we will borrow to get it. There's nothing sinful or derogatory about being buried in debt now. It used to be a bad thing. The acquisition of a home, and I'll say even an education now, through tremendous debt is viewed by most Americans as a great investment. And the debt bubble has proven this true over the last few decades, you know, as things have gone up. The concept that house values will continue to climb and the value of an education, really, indefinitely, which generates more and more greater amounts of debt, is the major factor that's fueled this artificial economic bubble that we're living in. Now the money that's being pumped out, you know, all that money Obama created has to go somewhere. He pumps it overseas and it ends up back here in ways, you know, for sure. I mean, and it fuels our economy without giving any money to American citizens. This is what Obama's belief was. He was a globalist. He wanted to increase the wealth of our foreign enemies, per se. I mean, it's an interesting concept. If he'd have pumped that money into the hands of Americans, we'd be having a different conversation today. If he'd have pumped that money straight into the economy, we'd be, not that it's okay to rack up all that debt, but Obama was dumping $1 trillion a year overseas, $1 trillion, $3,333 for every man, woman, and child in America. That's $14,000 or $13,000 whatever dollars per family of four. It's actually $16,700 per tax-paying citizen per year overseas. You think we've lost our marbles a bit? You know, we've got all these government-sponsored entities like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Sally Mae, you know, for student loans. They subsidize mortgages and student loans for people who would never, ever be qualified for these loans from a normal banking institution. So these high-risk borrowers have, you know, paid. They've acquired all this debt. They get AAA loan opportunities. Foolish borrowers begin to get a sense of entitlement about them, as if they were special because they could carry debt. I don't have time to talk about the Barney Frank mess, who, you know, he was pumping all this stuff and getting $600,000 a year pumped into his campaigns. But the reckless policies of our government through the Community Reinvestment Act started to bully lenders into making loans they never wanted to make. And I think you see where I'm going with this. It's just a matter of time before, you know, a substantial minority of borrowers could not or would not pay their debts. Talking to a friend of mine, that friend in Miami, he was saying knows all these people that don't pay their student loans. They don't pay half their debt. He said, you don't have to. I said, how can you not? And he goes, they have forgiveness programs. And he and I were talking, I guess we're the great fools. I paid off my student loan and my wife's student loan for many moons. Ground it out. Literally lived in poverty while I paid that thing back. You know, I guess we're from a different era. Doesn't make it okay. Like he and I were saying, you put your name on the dotted line. What does the Bible say about a good name? The Bible says a good name is better than pretty much anything you can imagine on this earth, that is better than anything you can leave this earth with. I think it's Proverbs 22:1 says, a good name is to be more desired than great wealth, and favor is better than silver or gold. Ecclesiastes 7, a good name is better than good ointment. And the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Whatever that means. I can talk about that, but I won't. But the point is, the good name is your value. You get to the point where I've been in business a long time. I got 30 years of impeccable credit. And I have access to substantial amounts of money to borrow. Substantial amounts. Numbers that would probably blow your mind. For business and whatnot, just because I've kept my name strong. And it's so important, if you sign on the dotted line, you do what you say you're going to do. I understand we get in situations where we think we can't, but I've spent years in banking and I saw people make payments on debts that they couldn't handle for 20 years just to make their name right. And it's a matter of integrity. It's between you and God. But folks, I've seen some of the worst financial advice come out of churches where they tell people it's okay to file bankruptcy without even asking what the heck they did and what's going on and how they got there. They got the sad story. They lost their job. So think about it. You get all this debt and then you lose your job and instantly you're bankrupt. Does that sound like you were living financially wise? It should not be that way. Did you really need the Nintendo Game Player Station or whatever it's called? Did you need the Bose surround system, you know, so bad? Did you need the brand new car? Did you need the wheels on the car? Did you need, I don't know. But folks, integrity is important. Now, I'll admit, we have gotten to a point where everyone's borrowing money. Everything's gotten extraordinarily expensive. Everything's debt-ridden. As they force us into a cashless society, which, by the way, in Europe, they have a full-blown five-year phase-out plan now. It's cash is going away. Precious metals are coming in. As we head into financial catastrophe, folks, at the very least, hyperinflation, you only have one option to invest and preserve and protect your wealth. That is in precious metals-based assets. That's the only thing that's going to last, always has, always will. God even says it does, folks. If you question that, how do I know it'll be worth money when? The Bible says specifically at the end times, the very final bell, the day of God's wrath, the day of his reckoning, people will be casting their gold and silver in the streets. That tells you that it has had financial security until the final hour. That he put that in there three times for a very specific reason, so you know. How about the fact that heaven's bedecked in gold? You know, we could go on like that. And precious stones. It's very real. It's very smart. It's very wise. It's the only safe, secure haven that you've got. And it's simple. 401ks and IRAs, your retirement plan. Folks, now is a good time. I'm not going to tell you that the market hasn't fluctuated and didn't hyperinflate back in 11 and 12 and all that. But now, you know, the buying opportunity is that the one thing is I had some gal say to me a while ago, she goes, well, I bought gold and silver one time and it went down. So I'm never going to buy it again. We talked in the last show about Warren Buffett. He's been in and out of it. Do you think if somebody gets a little bit of a stinger out of an investment, that means they should never touch it again? No, not if it's a God biblically ordained asset. I mean, I'm not going to disagree if it's certain, you know, you buy an annuity and you end up suffering a 20% surrender charge and, you know, all that stuff to get out, you've learned a lesson because that annuity never changed. You didn't lose your money because the annuity went down. You lost your money because it was a terrible investment vehicle in the first place. Precious metals-based assets are the most sound, long-term, timeless, proven form of money on earth. And by the way, in the Bible, they're referred to as money countless times, hundreds and hundreds of times they're referred to as money. They always have been money until we really got rolling on this Keynesian economic system. And it really in 71, when we went off the gold standard, is when things really started to churn and where we really started to see some serious corners being turned on hard assets as money. So as things potentially could begin to unravel, all of the smoke and mirrors around us, folks, they're distracting us from what's coming. We've got the new debt bubble or the debt ceiling coming up in April. That's going to be a battle royale because the Republicans now really are Democrat light. The people of America have no fiscal responsibility or maturity left in them. We either go bankrupt, hyperinflate, or go into the deepest, darkest depression this country has ever seen. We would have to strap our boots on and tighten up our belt for a decade to even fathom catching up to this debt, to even fathom getting a handle on it. And it would be so brutally uncomfortable. And as the, you know, Revelations talks about her excessive luxuries, we've had it. God can bless a nation. And when God, you know, it says when, you know, money, wealth that comes from God brings no sorrow, but, you know, ill-gotten gains will soon perish. Our economic system is a lie. It's a deception. So the question is, how far to the edge do you go? How long do you hang in there? You know, we can build you a good portfolio. We got, you know, rolls of dollars. We've got mercury, silver, dimes. These are all things you can buy for their silver content plus a little bit. And you've got upside, you know, and the focus is not on these items right now, folks. This is why it's such a great buying time. Take advantage of the opportunity. 401ks and IRAs, easy. Roll in, roll out. Coins Plus 444-0044 or through our website at coinsplus.com. Toll free 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646. Folks, we will help you. I mean, we do it. We know, we're confident, we believe in what we do. We're the only ones that can provide solid, timeless, hard, biblically approved investment vehicles. Not to mention, over the years, the returns have been stellar. Over the time, you know, post 9/11, precious metals-based assets have far outperformed any of the stock market as a whole, as an index. So just do the right thing. Again, you know, you just give us a call. Spokane number is 444-0044. Or you can contact us through the website. Hey, if you don't hear back, if you leave a message and you don't hear back, call again. We do have our times. Thanks again. Take care. I'll be back Friday. Bye-bye.